Now that the game is done, it's our time to check in.
Lopez sends it back to Giannis, and Giannis staples it down with a big two-hand slam on a rack attack.
Bucks talk starts now.
Ball is up. It's tipped ahead to Lillard. Lillard's going to get a shot. Fires it away for the tie off the back iron. No good. Well, they couldn't have asked for more than that.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios, here's Justin Garcia and Brandon Snide.
Four-game win streak comes to an end tonight for the Bucks, who come up short in Houston against the Rockets. It was everything I think many of us imagined. It went right to script. A defensive game, a back-and-forth game, a game that went all the way down to the wire. Bucks had some pretty prime opportunities. You go back to the fourth quarter, and that is really the big takeaway that I have from this. I'm not piling on. The Rockets are a very, very good defense. And I don't know, frankly, how much of this was, man, same old Bucks fourth quarter offense that we've kind of opined over versus this is just a really good Houston Rockets defense. But the bigger issue is it's become the norm for the Bucks that your offense in the fourth quarter and specifically in these clutch games just has not been good enough. Their defense certainly is. That's what's keeping them in the mix. But these final 25 games, I think we've talked about it before, the most important thing obviously is health and staying healthy. But outside of that, they have to figure out whatever is ailing the offense in those final 12 minutes of each and every game. 855-616-1620 is the Siding Unlimited talk and text line to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. I don't know. What do you think about what we saw in the fourth quarter here, Brandon? Any thoughts on that in the fourth quarter as a whole offensively that we've seen from the Bucks season to date?
Yeah, I mean, it took them 6 minutes, Justin, to score in the fourth quarter. And it wasn't even that they were taking good shots or they were just taking shots and missing. They just were turning the ball over, right? Like, it wasn't pretty. They had back-to-back turnovers. And on the other end, on the defensive side, I thought they were doing a very good job to kind of keep them into the game. And then on the other end, they were kind of shooting themselves in the foot. I don't know about you, Justin, but for me personally, when I look at losses, I divide them into four categories. You either have a bad loss, you got a frustrating loss, a disappointing loss, or an annoying loss. Tonight, for me, this one falls under an annoying loss. The Rockets were not the better team tonight. I know they won 197, I know that, but like I said before, it took the Bucks half of the fourth quarter to score, and it resulted in a three-point loss. The story of this one, as mentioned by Doc Rivers after the game, and by you on the post-game show, the offensive rebounding. I mean, 4-1, 16 offensive rebounds to the Bucks 4. And I know Houston's the best team at doing it, but that discrepancy going forward, especially as we're trying to figure out playoffs and seeding and whatnot, we got to be better on that. And I will agree with Doc. I thought they did a very well job boxing out and getting to their man. They just couldn't get a hold of the ball. I don't, you know, for whatever reason, we've seen it before where they're just unable to grab those 50-50 balls. Tonight was just obviously highlighted to much more because of that discrepancy, but that's your difference. I mean, they scored 16 points off of those second and third chance opportunities, and we lost 197. I mean, you fix that a little bit, game's over. But with all that being said, the Bucks did have those chances late in the fourth quarter, so you got to give them a little bit of credit. They were resilient tonight, not allowing those things to kind of weigh them down and not getting the games that they wanted to get out of Kyle Kuzma and Kevin Porter Jr. and Gary Trent Jr. that we've kind of grown accustomed to over this four-game win streak. It's just unfortunate that that streak ended the way that it did tonight in an annoying fashion, as I said to begin this, because I thought the Bucks played very well most of this game. It was just they have to fine-tune the little things, and that's getting those 50-50 balls, trying to do a little bit better on the offensive glass. But win or loss, we do adjust and we hand out the game ball tonight going out to Giannis. And you look at the box score, you're like, okay, well, he led the team in scoring. But that's not why I'm going to give it to Giannis. Because late in the fourth quarter, he's your supermax player. He's the league's two-time MVP, the finals MVP, a champion, 50 points in game 6. He's diving on the ball on the floor for loose balls, getting the steal. Then on the very next possession, he's blocking a shot to give this team as many opportunities late in this game to close this game out or at least tie the game. They obviously just couldn't get it done. But Giannis, man, what he does, again, on both ends of the floor, night in and night out, he's not even 100% healthy. Please don't take this for granted, but he gets my game ball tonight. Again, a game, in my opinion, Justin, they should have won. They lost. Now they're consolation prize. They get to welcome in another guy with multiple MVPs on Thursday night at Pfizer Forum.
All right, can you go through your four loss categories again?
Yeah, sure. So my four loss categories, when I watch a game, this is it results in a loss. It's either a bad loss to me, a frustrating loss, disappointing loss, or an annoying loss.
I think I understand what a bad loss is, but I'm going to need some clarification on the last three.
Okay, so a frustrating loss would be that they just didn't play their game, right? They just didn't. They didn't play up to the capabilities that we've seen them play. A disappointing loss is that you go to you host Washington and you lose a game, and you just don't show up. An annoying loss is something that happened tonight, where you had many, many chances late in the game. You didn't play your best game overall, but you were still there. You still gave yourself opportunities to win the game. You had a couple shots by one of the most clutch players of all time late in the game. You gave up a lot of rebounds, although I know Houston's really good at crashing the glass. But that's how I categorize them. Again, this is a Brandon scale. Feel free to not have to use it or use your own, but that's how I categorize.
I'm going to stick to my own.
And that's fine.
And what's a bad loss then?
A bad loss is where you just don't show up.
So what's the difference between a bad loss and whatever the example was if you lose to the Wizards?
A disappointing loss?
I feel like there's a lot of overlap in the Venn diagram of these losses.
I mean, there might be, but that's just how I look at it. And you know, a bad loss, I mean, it goes by, I would say, case by case, right? If you're on 2 days rest and you lay a goose egg, to a team that you should win, you could categorize that as a bad loss. If you were on a back-to-back and you're like, we probably should have beat that team, we just didn't, that you could categorize that as a disappointing loss. Again, for those folks listening at home and for Justin and maybe for producer Matt, this is a Brandon scale. Feel free to not use it or create your own.
Yeah, it was kind of a shoulder shrug loss for me, I guess, if we're creating our own skills
here.
Venn
diagram.
The Rockets are good, right? And their offense, I still think, leaves a lot to be desired. But I'm not quite sure how much of the fourth quarter was the Bucks just playing poorly offensively, or the Rockets' defense forcing them into that. I think there was a little bit of overlap in the two. But, I think if we take the positives from this game tonight, it's that it felt like a playoff game. And we have seen a different style of play from the Bucks of late. I know they were down by 10, in the second quarter?
Times.
Did it get to 10 again in the third quarter? If it did, it was only early in the third.
It was either 8 or 10, but it was close.
It was basically, once you got to the midpoint of the fourth quarter, it was a tight game. And we have seen, I hesitate to even bring it up because now we're going to see a stretch where it happens, but we have seen less and less of these games where the Bucks, case in point, those two losses to the Knicks, like those types of games. We haven't really seen a lot of those of late, that this team is starting to find different ways to play and piecing together more consistency. It just, to me, comes back to the offense in the fourth quarter. Because that's going to be the most important part for this team when you get to the playoffs. We've stressed the importance of defense and the position that they put themselves in, and I do want to use this game and the four-game win streak as a whole, too, to take a closer look at how this team is playing differently now and some of the changes that we have seen. I remember having this conversation on this show many times in 2022 and the the offseason shortly after they acquired Damian Lillard to the lead up to the new season, it boiled down to you can't win a game 0-1. Like, you got to score points. And that was the impetus for the trade to bring in Dame and ship out Drew Holiday of, hey, down the stretch, our fourth quarter offense, our half court offense is not good enough. And last year, everything went wrong. Your defense wasn't good enough. Your health wasn't good enough. That had kind of been the trend and the carryover from the last couple of years. You feel really good about where you're at defensively and the different ways that this group can play and some of the new pieces that have been introduced as well. But with Giannis and Damian Lillard on the team, like, we should still not be having this conversation. We should not still be having this conversation of how is the offense teetering on middle of the pack offense and far and away among competitive teams, the worst in the league in the fourth quarter. Like, how is this the case? And that is the biggest thing that this team, I'm not going to say needs to address. I don't think they're ignoring it. Needs to fix, because otherwise it's going to be same results, different reason why. Well, hey, this time you were healthy and your defense was good enough, but your offense wasn't. So I'm not saying it can't be fixed, and I'm not even saying I'm worried about it, but these next 25 games, like that, if we prioritize what you need to focus on, that is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 probably on that list of, hey, the offense, fix the offense.
Let me ask you a question, because I'm looking at the game chart here, Justin, and again, maybe I'm off, you know, centered here. And I know that Giannis sat for a little bit in the fourth quarter and Damian Lillard sat as well. What do you think the right amount of field goal attempts combined for those two in the fourth quarter should be at in a clutch situation type game, in a one or two possession type game? What in your opinion, what's the ideal field goal attempts between those two combined that you would like to see, or that you think is a winning formula in these type of games?
It's not dodging the question. I honestly don't have one. It varies depending on the opponent and depending on how the game is going, and it takes free throw attempts into account too.
So, and that's fine. I'm not kind of put you on the spot there, but the only reason I'm asking is because tonight they combined for 7 in the fourth quarter, and I feel like that was.
But look at how many the team had.
Though they had 18. I get that, but that's a whole other conversation. But in a game like this, I need, and again, I've said this before, I want, in these situations, especially clutch situations, this is why you brought Damian Lillard into Milwaukee, and you and I had talked about it just a few shows ago, that when you ship a guy like Chris Middleton out, who has been one of your most clutch players, especially in the postseason, that somebody was going to have to step up, and that somebody was going to have to be that guy, or is going to have to be that guy going forward, especially as the playoffs loom. And I said a few shows ago, I want that guy to be Damian Lillard. I want the offense in late in the game to go through Damian Lillard because of what he can do, the many things that he can do. 7 attempts in the fourth quarter between those two players, Giannis only having 2 of them, I thought was a offensive failure just for tonight. Doesn't mean going forward that it can't get
again,
rectified.
They had 7 total free throw attempts in the quarter, and they both played 7 minutes.
Well, I understand that, but I mean, if you're looking at failures in the fourth quarter, you're looking at why this offense can't get going.
If they both played roughly half the quarter, and they basically had half of your field goal attempts and all of your free throw attempts, I don't have an issue with it.
But that's going back to the point that I'm trying to make, is that if your offense is going through Dame as a team, you'll have more field goal attempts, right or wrong, or you should, in theory, correct?
I don't know that that's the case. Why?
Well, because if you're running your offense through Damian Lillard, you're going to have an opportunity. He's going to get blitzed, or he's going to get double teamed. You're going to have an open guy. You're going to have an open shooter. And somewhere in that, ideally, right?
But for the other guys, you're saying?
Yeah. I'm saying as like getting the offense going, if you run it through Damian Lillard, number one, I want him to shoot the ball more. But number two, if you're running the offense through him primarily, he's going to attract, you know, more than one guy, and you're going to have more looks at open shots.
I mean, doesn't that kind of speak to the numbers? Like, I'm not sure what we're getting at here. The offense was clunky in the fourth quarter. I agree with that. I still think, you know, like a game like tonight, when you got both Giannis and Damian Lillard, still Giannis especially, still on that quote-unquote minutes restriction, and both guys played 7 minutes in the fourth quarter, like, that was the undoing, was the first 5 minutes of the fourth quarter, when you just had turnovers and missed shots, and both these teams took a couple of minutes to score. The Bucks certainly took, what, 4 minutes to get a field goal in that fourth quarter. I think it's explainable, it's understandable in this game, but unfortunately, this is not the only game where that has been the case with the Bucks' offensive performance in the fourth quarter of games. Like, hey, I just go back to, if you would have told any of us at the start of this season or in the offseason that the Bucks are very clearly one of the 10 best defenses in the league, but you hope they can stay in the top half of the league offensively, we would have thought you were crazy. And that's basically what it's been, that this has consistently been a very, very good defense. Like, coming into play tonight, they were tied for 10th. They had a 100 defensive rating tonight. I think the Rockets only had 100 possessions. So that number's going to continue to climb, and they're probably going to be 9th. In defensive rating after this game tonight. But unfortunately, you had an offensive rating that was sub 100 in this game. So that number is going to continue to drop. You got to find the happy medium. I think we talked about it a couple of shows ago, too. Like, it's great to be in the top 10 and to continue to moving upward. I would honestly trade off if you said the defense is at least better than league average and your offense is something that's, you know, 8, 7, somewhere around there, especially in the clutch, because we're to the point with, what, 25 games left? Wherever it is you are, I'll look it up during the break, wherever they are in the movement that we saw from this tonight, but you're not going to all of a sudden jump up 8 spots in offensive efficiency unless you just piece together a stretch where you're scoring 140 points for 10 straight games. Like, you're probably set where you are. Maybe you move up 1 or 2 spots. Fourth quarter is what you have to keep an eye on, and clutch minutes. Like, that you can make movement on and do something about. So that, to me, is the most important thing as we start to trek through these final 25 games. 855-616-1620. The number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk, where the Bucks rank after this, on the defensive side, on the offensive side as well. And a little bit more on the schedule that they have in front of them. One game left now in February. I want to take a closer look in March because we've paid a lot of lip service to, hey, Bucks' schedule gets pretty tough after the All-Star break. We're not quite there yet. It's gotten tougher. But it gets really tough about 10 days from now. So we'll take a look at that coming up after this on Bucks Talk.
Welcome back to Bucks Talk.
One of those games that'll keep you up at night. It really was. And my guess is, we'd have won, then he may would have said the same thing, because, you know, both teams are right there.
Hey, Doc Rivers. So what? Frustrating? Annoying? Where would he classify this one?
I was going to say that's a new category right there. Games keep you that up keep at you night? Up at night. I don't know if I'm quite there with Doc on this one, but that's where he is.
You don't think this is a keep-you-up-at-night game?
It's pretty close. You said it was a shrug game. I think those two are pretty far apart.
Very far apart.
But this is a game you're going to think about as a game they could have won. Not the end of the world, but
correct,
they could have won.
Yep, I'm with you, Matt. Yeah, that's why it's annoying to me. That's why it's annoying. It's not frustrating.
Wait, did you
it's
say annoying from the start?
Yes. Thanks for listening.
I don't know. We'll have to instant replay that. Wait, what were the four What were the four categories? Annoying,
buddy.
Frustrating.
Bad, frustrating, disappointing, and then annoying, which I said this one falls under the category of annoying because of what Doc kind of said.
So you said annoying, Doc said to keep you up at night, I said a shrug, and you said what, Matt?
I'll go with annoying as well. I'm kind of in line with Brandon there.
Okay. Saw there are a few comments that were calling out the coaching for the Bucks.
Yeah, we're getting a lot of those on YouTube as well, and I don't know why. I'm not really sure.
What would you have done differently?
Yeah, I don't understand that one either, Justin. I'm not there yet either.
Our friend Lance in the comments section suggested that Giannis didn't get enough plays down the stretch. Kind of alluding to what Brandon was talking about the shot attempts from Giannis and Dame in the fourth quarter. That was one of the accusations against Doc.
I mean,
I don't know if that's on Doc, though.
Yeah, I mean
Houston's really good.
Well,
they're good.
I also don't think it's on Doc. I mean, I'd have to rewatch it. But also, you know, the Bucks missed a lot of good looks, especially in the fourth quarter. Kyle Kuzma alone. And that is... Kyle Kuzma has clearly been a big upgrade for the Bucks. 9.6 rebounds and assists. Pretty solid defense once again tonight. 4 of 10 from the field, 1 of 4 on threes. Like, that is going to be the biggest thing to watch with Kyle Kuzma, because once we get to the playoffs, you know, it's, look, if we're going to be fair, it's no different than the conversations that that I've had, that I know, if we classified the conversations and your reaction to them, frustrating, I would peg it as, Brandon. When it feels like, I think some people feel like I'm too hard on Andre Jackson Jr. To be fair, it's not to that level, but it's just as important for Kyle Kuzma because he shot the crap out of the ball in the bubble. A lot of people did. And the three-point numbers, not great this season. Not great the past few seasons. A game like tonight, he had a pretty big corner three that he missed. I don't want to just peg it on one shot, but there was the sequence, too, where you see the good and the bad of, or the good and the frustrating, at least. He gets down the floor so quickly, gets to the basket, misses, gets blocked, gets it back, misses again. You left a lot of points on the board with shots like that. And assuming this starting lineup that we've seen, which, by the way, when we were talking about, do you pull Andre Jackson Jr. out of the starting lineup? I don't think any of us brought up the name of Torian Prince as the guy that plays two guard. You get the sense this is where the Bucks kind of want to go to, you know, back up some of that size that Doc Rivers has talked about as well. When you look at all those guys, Torian Prince to a lesser extent, but Kyle Kuzma is going to be the guy that teams give dare shots to in the playoffs and just say, okay, if Kyle Kuzma's hitting threes, Kyle Kuzma's hitting threes. But we're going to close out harder on Brooke Lopez. We're going to close out and double Damian Lillard. We're going to rotate more help over to Giannis. We'll respectfully close out on Torian Prince, but if we get caught in rotations, Kyle Kuzma's the guy we're leaving open.
Yeah, and I'll kind of mostly agree with that too, Justin. And the thing with Kyle Kuzma, I feel like since he's arrived in Milwaukee, has been him like driving the ball, like getting downhill and finding the open guy or finishing at the basket. Tonight he had 10 attempts, and almost half of those came from the three ball. And I don't think that's his game. I don't think that's his strength. And that's something I would like to see him kind of.
I don't know that. Yeah, it's 3-point shooting is not his strength, but it's the one thing that I think a lot of us maybe overlooked those first few games when Kuz had arrived in Milwaukee and Giannis wasn't playing yet. Is you saw a lot of, I don't want to say things that Giannis was doing, but that type of play style where Kyle Kuzma's. Yeah. Getting up and down the floor and playing in transition and some of the unorthodox, difficult shots that he would just get to fall. And when Giannis came back, there was a lot more catch and shoots that were popping up. And it's, you know, one of the things that Doc even talked about before the game about Jericho Sims, and that he likes a lot that he's seen already, his screen setting and the fact that, you know, he doesn't just screen the guy and then slip or roll to the basket. He screens and he holds it. So you really get a good look. And mention A.J. Green and Gary Trent Jr., these guys are already eyeing Jericho Sims and trying to get over to the same side of the floor as him because they know he's going to create open looks for them. But as soon as Giannis came up, Doc immediately said, no, we don't like those. We can't play Giannis with Jericho Sims because of the shooting factor. So to a lesser extent, it's not that you can't play Giannis with Kyle Kuzma, but I do need to see more of Kyle Kuzma's strengths offensively. It's not that it's gone completely because, you know, Kyle Kuzma's drives still create offensive opportunities, but it's kind of like a hybrid of the Jericho Sims discussion and Andre Jackson Jr. of, okay, there's only so many of those when you're on the floor with Giannis. You can get him in transition, but otherwise, Giannis is the guy that's doing that, and we need to surround him with shooters. So we kind of need you to make your threes, Kyle.
And let me say this, too, and I'm curious to see if you're in line with me here. This is only the fourth game they've played together, like Giannis and Kyle Kuzma. Like, I still think we have to kind of understand that and know that, that role, that, you know, rhythm, that flow, that responsibility is going to still be evolving for those two as they try to figure out one another. And I think as time goes on, and I know it's not helpful when you lose a game where I think all of us agreed that they probably could have won, that these things are going to take a little bit, right? Like when Kyle Kuzma was acquired, Giannis wasn't practicing or he wasn't at least going 100%. So this thing's just kind of starting with these two. They're 3-1 together since Giannis has returned to the starting lineup. So I'm encouraged nonetheless, but I do think that position, and Doc Rivers mentioned it, I know that we had the audio on the network postgame, that he didn't think he used them enough, and that was kind of on him. So I guess that's where maybe some fans and listeners are kind of blaming the Doc narrative. I won't go there, but I think that this is something that we got to let breathe a little bit before we start jumping into what's working and what's not working.
A couple other comments about some of those plays down the stretch I do want to get to. I think there's a lot of individual plays in the fourth quarter that stand out and are worthy of discussion, but one that's popping up quite a bit is that Brook Lopez three-pointer. I do want to take a look at that and game situations. It seems like there's a lot of pushback on that shot. Doc Rivers did talk about it a little bit after the game as well, so we'll get to that conversation coming up after this on Bucks Talk.
Lopez, long bomb from three. It misses, back iron, rebound, batted at. Jalen Green's got it. Boy, I'll tell you what, that was a 33-foot shot from Lopez. I know he's got it in him, but that was a long ways to go.
All right, so that is one of the plays that has come under quite a bit of scrutiny. We still get a lot of feedback on this being a coaching loss, and I gotta admit, I just don't see it. So if you have a specific example or reason why, I'm all ears, but I don't leave this game saying Doc Rivers and the Bucks coaching staff cost the Bucks this game. I mean, Giannis and Dame should have played the entire fourth quarter. They're not going to. And like, we've heard this for a while now, especially Giannis, the minutes limit that they're trying to keep him at. Not that this is what he's going to play for the remainder of the regular season. As Doc said before the game tonight, hey, the quote-unquote restriction, that number is at least in the 30s now. So that's a good spot to be, but we're still working our way to get him there. So if it's like 32 minutes, you're not going to play him 12 minutes in the fourth quarter. And even if you say, well, then, you know, just work it out where you can play him 20 minutes through the first three quarters and save 12 minutes for the fourth quarter. What if the game's
like,
yeah, what if you don't need that? So it's that's the tough part. I don't have an issue with that, knowing it is what it is. And the larger conversation, too, of, look, Giannis himself basically told you, I am going to be more cautious, and I have recognized, not that I have to take better care of myself. I don't think anybody would say that about Giannis, but like, I got to pay attention to when some of these things start to pop up and I feel a little bit of discomfort. It happened to me last year, and I just pushed right through it. And I had the soleus strain, and who knows, like, could have been even worse. So, I don't leave this saying, well, Giannis has to play all 12 minutes in the fourth quarter.
No, I'm in agreement with you. And to Doc's defense, because I'm going to defend him for a minute here too, like, the players that started the fourth quarter tonight were the same players that started the fourth quarter against the Miami Heat and went on that 7-0 run and got the Bucks back into the game. The same players that started the fourth quarter against the Washington Wizards and led that come-from-behind win. Like, tonight was just not a good night.
Tonight was a better team, but yeah.
Better team, and you just didn't get the production that you were getting out of those guys. You know, the Gary Trent Jr.'s, Kevin Porter Jr., AJ
Green
had a
handful. That's the biggest part. Yeah. Like your bench wasn't productive tonight.
And that's where it's at. If you're a little bit better,
if your bench is productive, this isn't a conversation and you probably win the game. You know, like AJ Green had a good night. So I don't want to say your entire bench wasn't productive, but Gary Trent Jr. has had some big games and moments lately. That wasn't the case. So, and even the talk too of you got to stagger these guys and have one on the court at all times. In a vacuum, I don't disagree. But again, we cannot ignore that they're monitoring the minutes of both of these guys. So it's easier said than done. And if you stagger them, you're pretty much saying, well, only one of these guys is on the floor at the end of the game, which goes against the entire goal here. People calling out rebounding. I don't know how many times we pointed out before the game. The Houston Rockets, by a wide margin, are the best offensive rebounding team in the league. So this is what you should expect, even when, as Doc kind of pointed out, too, like, I felt like overall I got to rewatch it, but we were in a good position on a lot of these, and I thought we boxed guys out, and they just got to the ball. That's what the Houston Rockets do and have done throughout the course of the season. The Bucks do not chase offensive rebounds. They have not all season long. This is nothing new. So to say, hey, why is everybody getting back in transition after they shoot the ball? The Bucks aren't the only team that does that. Like, that's how they have avoided their defense falling off a cliff, or one of the ways. And Doc has said, we're in a better spot now where we have guys that I feel like can crash offensive glass and still get back. The Rockets are a really good team on both ends, offense and defensive rebounding. So I think that partially played into it. And again, your minutes restriction and the optimized groupings that you could have on the floor is another big piece of it. So I think we're just grasping at straws with things like that. What I do want to get back to is the highlight that you heard coming into this segment and the Brook Lopez shot that would have, tied the game?
Correct. Yep.
I guess I am probably on an island here. I didn't have a huge problem with it because of the time on the clock. It was a 33-ish foot shot. I mean, from the spot where Brook Lopez took the shot, he's 3 of 16 on threes this season. Certainly not great. But there was, 25 or so seconds left. It was an open look. And Doc said after the game, I mean, the one misstep was he kind of positioned himself probably two steps too far. How did he word? Do we have what he said?
The Brook three, he just ran too far out of place. We told him, we knew it, that if Giannis rolls, either Giannis is going to get a quick dunk or Brook's going to get a three. But Brook kind of found himself out of the area. Probably shouldn't have taken that one.
Okay. So Doc says he probably shouldn't have taken it. I honestly didn't have a problem because 25.6 seconds left at the time that he released that shot. He catches the ball there. It's a wide open look. We've seen Brook hit some deep threes. He passes that up. You're talking about rattling off whatever it is, 5, 6, 7 or more seconds. You get probably a 2. Maybe you do get an open 3. But let's say you just got to keep moving the ball around and you get an open look for two, like the Giannis dunk that the Bucks got with 9 seconds left. You get that, it's down to a one-point game. But then you get into that range on the clock that we saw in the final 9 seconds, that once you get below 18 or so seconds, it becomes the foul game of, okay, down by one. Even if the Rockets hit both free throws, we are fouling you. And then you're just going to have to play that foul game and keep chasing from there on out. So to me, as deep as it was, I don't know that you could have said, we feel like we're going to get just as good of a shot from here on out. And, you know, you ended up getting at least one more with Damian Lillard. I think the Dame foul, too, is another thing that's been brought up by a lot of people. And I know in real time, I felt the same way, too, of how is that not three-point attempt? And Doc talked about that after the game, too, that Dame anticipated the foul was coming. Got the shot up immediately, didn't get awarded the three shots, but upon further review, when you saw the replay, look, we've seen Dame not get continuation quite a bit this year. It was Tari Eason, I think, was the defender that fouled him. He did have his right hand on Damian Lillard almost immediately. I know it was quick that Dame got the shot up, but to me, when you saw the replay, it was pretty bang-bang, and it wasn't from the first angle we saw. He was clearly already starting to shoot it. Like, I can kind of get that one. It was just, I think the way to sum it up was Bucks had some pretty good opportunities for the situation they were in down the stretch, and unfortunately, none of it went their way.
Yeah, I guess I'm going to disagree with you a little bit. I think it was a... Not only do I think it was a bad shot, but the timing of it, I just don't understand. I guess that's where I'm in disagreement with you. Respectfully, there's 26 seconds after he lets it go. I don't understand what the rush of the shot is at that point when you have AJ Green. There's obviously Damian Lillard out there. Giannis is open underneath the basket. To me, that just felt like a panic, like, oh crap, the play kind of is screwed up, the timing and the spacing. And that's, again, like to your point, is it a bad shot? Sure, I guess. Going back at it, I think he probably wouldn't have taken it. But I will say that wasn't the one play that made me the most upset, Justin. And I'm going to go back into that flagrant 2 foul from Amen Thompson on Giannis. And the one thing, I tweeted it out. The one thing that bothered me about that foul is that no other Milwaukee Buck went up to defend Giannis and get in the face of Thompson and let him know, hey, man, like, that was a little too far. That's where I miss Bobby Portis tonight. That's the things that, that made me a little bit more upset, I suppose, than the Brook Lopez 3. Brook Lopez has plays where you kind of scratch your head. I feel like almost every game where you're like, I don't know if that was the play I would have had, but I don't know. I felt like the way that Giannis was fouled, nobody went up to the defense of Giannis. I thought that made me a little bit more upset than, I guess, the Brook Lopez 3 did, because the Bucks did, after he missed that, had multiple chances. Damian Lillard's last shot was a great look, fantastic look. I would take that look 10 out of 10 times from a guy like Damian Lillard. Just missed it.
855-616-1620, the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. And yeah, I mean, I don't disagree that I think if Bobby Portis is on the floor, you at least see somebody getting chest to chest with Amen Thompson. I mean, I don't look. It was very clearly a flagrant too, and I think looking at Amen Thompson's reaction afterwards too, there was no intent behind it. And even when he was ejected, and you could see he saw the replay and was kind of like, oh. Yeah, I guess I was a lot more aggressive than I originally felt like I was. But to your point, yeah, I do think, regardless of intent, if Bobby Portis is on the floor, you saw a lot of guys run to Giannis immediately to check on him and help him out. But like you see Bobby or somebody else, Pat Beverly last year,
Andre Jackson Jr. probably would.
immediately chest to chest with him, like, hey, that's not happening here. So, yeah, but they got very good looks and very good opportunities down the stretch. I mean, we just mentioned it, and I suppose we should talk about that one too. How much the Bucks benefited in the final 3 seconds of this game and nearly were able to, I don't want to say steal a win, but force overtime because of something that ordinarily, like, we'll save it for the next segment, but this should not have come down to the position it did, and the Bucks greatly benefited. So we'll continue to take a look at this one tonight, and get you set for Thursday night as Nikola Jokic and the Denver Nuggets come to town. We'll get into that conversation after this. You could not have asked for a better look in the closing seconds. And, I mean, Damian Lillard oddly misses the first free throw. I think regardless, even if he made the first free throw, you would have had to miss the second one because at the time, it comes down to the foul game of 3 seconds left. If you hit the second free throw and make it a one-point game with 3.7 seconds left, Rockets inbound the ball, you foul them. Let's say you only take a second off the clock. Still talking about less than 3 seconds remaining in the game, and the Bucks had no timeouts. So it's definitely a heave it in and get a bad look and force up a three. So they benefited greatly over the fact that there was a double lane violation and you had to resort to a jump ball at midcourt. And Damian Lillard catches the ball. Doc Rivers talked about it after the game as well. Of you could see he and I think it was Tari Eason that was shadowing him back and forth. And the officials like, all right, you got to pick where you're going to stand so he can pick where he's going to stand. And they finally got settled. And Damian Lillard's ability to catch the ball facing the basket so that way the Rockets can't foul you. Because they do. You see the foul coming. You're going into the shooting motion. And as much as we just said, well, it was pretty close on that past half-court heave that he got up. I mean, it's a much different story if you're that close to the three-point line, you're facing the basket, you catch, and you're starting a shooting motion. So you couldn't have asked for a better look there from Damian Lillard. And, I mean, that was kind of the story down the stretch for the Bucks. That shot attempt, the Brook Lopez shot that we just talked about, and even rewatching that replay, I'm not going to try to convince anybody it was a good shot from Brook Lopez. My point was, I don't have as big of a problem with that shot, but yeah, there were other things you could have said. Let's maybe kick it to AJ Green in the corner there. Everybody's pointing to, well, Giannis was wide open under the basket. I don't really think so. There were still Upper and Şengün lingering there, and the Rockets have done a good job of playing passing lanes. Asking Brook Lopez to dump it over Alperen Şengün and into the paint to Giannis, if you turn it over there, that's even worse than getting the three. So in that sense, I didn't have a huge issue with it, but it just boiled down to, man, you had a lot of chances. Everything that started to go your way, the flagrant two, Giannis hitting free throws, Dame getting that look, Dame getting a heave that he wasn't awarded three free throws on, Brook Lopez's look, Kyle Kuzma with the double missed shots at the rim, Kyle Kuzma with a missed corner three. Like, that was the story of the game to me more than anything else. Bucks just didn't hit shots. They didn't take advantage of the opportunities that they had in this one.
I don't know. To me, Justin, it sounds like you're describing an annoying loss if I were just tuning in to the program. But I agree with most of what you said. And the thing that about the Brook Lopez shot, that it doesn't necessarily bother me as much as it does to some people, and you know that if there's something that annoys me about Brook Lopez, I would describe it. But tonight, I wasn't necessarily overly annoyed at that shot, and it's because of the looks that Damian Lillard got late in the game. If you're a Bucks fan, or if you're an NBA fan, and you're watching Damian Lillard, and he wasn't going to his left, he took a dribble to the right. But if you were to draw that up and replay that over and over again, and 10 times, he's probably going to make it 7 to 8 times in those type of situations. And that's exactly the look that he got. I mean, it was a great look. He just missed the shot. And, you know, it wasn't the Brook Lopez shot, I think, would be a different conversation, Justin, if that was the last shot attempt that the Bucks got. But they didn't. They got a few more after that. They got blessed by the double lane violation, like you mentioned. So yeah, it's not, you know, the best shot, but I don't think it's on my list of annoyance topics going, you know, post, you know, this loss. I look, it's just it's an annoying loss because of things like what you just mentioned. That's why I chalked this one up tonight as more of an annoying loss, because the opportunities were all there.
You had Jalen Green and Dame trade three-pointers at around the three-minute mark in the fourth quarter. And from that point forward, we saw 9 points scored the rest of the way for both teams. 7 of those points came at the free throw line. The only field goal the rest of the way was at Giannis dunk with 9 seconds left. So it just shows you, yeah, we can say the offense and where it left a lot to be desired, but I think you saw the Bucks match a really good defense on their own. Now the 10th sole possession, a 10th best defense in the league for the Bucks at a 112 defensive rating. I mean, you look at other teams in front of them, they could realistically finish this season around 7th or 6th defensively, but the bigger part of it is a 113.4 offensive rating, which is 15th in the NBA. The Houston Rockets are not a good half-court offense. Houston is in front of the Bucks. The Detroit Pistons are in front of the Bucks in offensive efficiency. The Spurs and Bulls aren't that far behind the Bucks like that. That's the bigger story is, hey, the defense has exceeded expectations and outkicked the coverage, but man, how is the offense sitting where it is with Giannis and Damian Lillard on this group? We will preview the matchup with the Denver Nuggets and wrap things up after this. All right, so the updated clutch rankings for the Bucks. By the way, the Houston Rockets have the most clutch wins in the NBA. They're 21-16. In those games, their 37 clutch games is tied with the Minnesota Timberwolves for the most in the league. The Bucks have played the 12th most at 26 now. They're 14-12 and had won 4 in a row prior to this loss tonight. But kind of a retread of what we said before about the overall picture here, the Bucks have the second best defensive rating in the clutch this season, 100.4. The only team in front of them is the Orlando Magic, who have an absurd 93.5 defensive rating in those spots. Unfortunately, as good as their defense has been, 100.4 in the clutch, they have a negative net rating. Like, how is that possible? They have a 96.7 offensive rating in clutch situations, which is second worst in the league. The only team worse is the Washington Wizards. And it's the Bucks, Wizards, and Heat are the only three teams that have an offensive rating below 100 in clutch situations. I mean, the other teams in your neighborhood, it's a group you don't want to be associated with. Heat are directly in front of them at 99.2. The Brooklyn Nets, the Chicago Bulls, the San Antonio Spurs, the Charlotte Hornets have a better offensive rating in the clutch. So do the Pelicans. So do the 76ers, who have had just about everything go wrong for them. The Raptors, the Utah Jazz. Like, that's how bad it has been offensively in these moments. I don't know what it is. I don't know why it's like that. But that's the most important part for these final 25 games is, how do you improve that? And again, for where they rank, 96.7. It's not even a, hey, you got to move that to, can you get into the top 10? No. So it's primarily just, let's look at the final 25 games. Where does the offense rank over that course? And especially in the clutch, to see that improvement that we're looking for. And you're probably going to need one of these on Thursday night when the Denver Nuggets come to town. With Nikola Jokic, they have started to play much, much better basketball. They're basically right there where the Bucks are in terms of the volume of clutch games that they have played. But for Denver, really good offense in the clutch, good enough defense in the clutch. So you got to start to get to that level. Third best net rating in clutch games for the Denver Nuggets. So you got a lot of these challenges coming up when you look at teams that really excel there. The Cavaliers, Pacers, and Nuggets are the top three teams. Still got games against all three of those teams. Two against Denver, two against Indiana, one against Cleveland. Sacramento Kings are number five. You got a game against them. Orlando Magic, again, their defense is what's fueling that. Got games against them. So you're going to have a lot of these challenges, and you look at the games left for the Bucks. Two games left against the Lakers. Two games left against the Mavs. Another game with the Atlanta Hawks. All of these teams are in the top 10. So the long and short of it is, I get the sense you're going to have a lot of these games in your final 25 games, so it should be ample opportunity for the Bucks to really start to improve that number.
Yeah, and that's the exciting part, I think, too, Justin, right? It's like the frustrating, it's the anxious, but I look at it as like that's the exciting part, because when it comes to the postseason, you're not going to get layups, right? You're going to have a potential first round matchup with the team that knocked you out of the playoffs a year ago. Then you're going to, if you get past that, you're going to go play a top three seed in the Eastern Conference, teams that you haven't yet beat in the regular season. So this is exactly, I feel like, what this team kind of needs, right? They don't have time to kind of get comfortable and get situated. Like, they need to get, they're walking right into the fire, you know, face first. And I think that's, you know, I'm trying to be positive about it and look at the positives. And I think this is going to force this team to kind of lock in these last 6 weeks or so of the regular season and kind of get in and play with some of the best teams. And it's going to be a challenge, right? It's a challenge on the court. It's a challenge schedule wise, because in the whole month of March, they pretty much play every other day. They have 15 games in the month of March. So it's only going to get tougher, but this is what creates good teams going forward in the long run, is that you're able to kind of forge yourself in that fire. And I expect this Bucks team to kind of rise to the challenge. Tonight was a great example. It was a good game. Like, with ample opportunities as we've talked about all night, that they could have won this game tonight against a team that is in the top five in the Western Conference. And now you're going to get to showcase that again to another Western Conference team on Thursday night. But this time, you're going to be home.
So leading up to the five-game West Coast road trip, I talked about this on another show this morning. You had 11 games going into that. So now it's down to 10. I thought it was very important you go 7-4 in those 11 games, if not better. So 7-3 in these next 10 games. Those 10 games, the Denver Nuggets on Thursday, then you have back-to-back road games, but this is where the last two sets of 2 days off comes into play. So you play Denver at home on Thursday, then you're in Dallas Saturday night. Dallas isn't going to have Anthony Davis or Daniel Gafford or Derek Lively in that game. Then you get 2 days off, and then you're in Atlanta against the Hawks. You need to win that game because of the very, very few games against sub-500 teams you have the rest of the way. You need to win that game. Then you have a back-to-back. So Tuesday night in Atlanta, Wednesday night at home against Dallas. Again, Dallas is going to be without all those guys. Anthony Davis isn't being reevaluated until March 6th, one day after you play them. Then you have 2 days off, and that's the final instance of that. And it's part of a three-game homestand and six out of seven games at home. So 2 days off, the Magic at home. You got to win that game, too. For where Orlando is in the standings, sub-500, the offense has really fallen off a cliff and cratered. Got the Cavs at home. That is another back-to-back. Then you have a game against the Indiana Pacers. Those are arguably your two biggest games left this season, the Pacers. On the road, March 11th, at home, March 15th. Sandwich in between those, the Lakers at home. And then again, back-to-back, Saturday night the 15th at home against the Pacers, Sunday night the 16th at home against the Oklahoma City Thunder. So both times you play the Thunder this season, officially play them, it's night two of a back-to-back. And then you hit the road for that five-game West Coast road trip in Golden State or in San Francisco against the Warriors, in L.A. against the Lakers, in Sacramento against the Kings, in Phoenix against the Suns, which suddenly looks a lot less daunting, and in Denver against the Nuggets before you start to wrap up the month. So, again, I still think you got to win seven of these next 10 games, because what that does is, we're not hoping for it. If you hit the skids again on that five-game West Coast road trip just as they did a season ago, just as they did on the four-game Western Conference trip earlier this year, you've at least built in a buffer there. So all these games in the immediate future, you're at home against the Denver Nuggets. Now, they're well-rested. They're going to have 2 days off, but you're at home. Then you got a banged-up Mavs team twice. You get a lot of rest around it. You do have a back-to-back, but get 4 days off among those two games. The Hawks, you got to win that. The Magic, you got to win that with the way their offenses look. So there is a path to this. And I suppose we'll save this for as we get closer to the end of the season. But what I would just say is we've spent a lot of time focusing on can the Bucks hang on to the four seed? I mean, long ago, we basically wrote off getting any higher than that. And I think especially after this loss tonight, you're five back of the Knicks in the loss column. I mean, you're six back because you don't have the head-to-head tiebreaker. You're not catching the Knicks. You're not making up six games in 25 games, barring massive injuries for the Knicks and you go on a hot streak, right? Four through six is separated by just two games in the loss column, and you got four games left against both of those teams, the Pacers and the Pistons. But what I would just say, and we can certainly revisit Thursday and as we get closer and closer to the playoffs, I am not convinced the four seed is mandatory. I'm not convinced it's the worst thing in the world if the Bucks finish sixth and get a first-round matchup with the New York Knicks. Like I know the way that it's gone the first two games. I think the way that the Bucks have reshaped the roster at the trade deadline and some of the struggles that we've seen from the Knicks and the way that other teams have defended the Knicks, which the Bucks can move closer to doing now with these new pieces, I don't think that's the worst possible matchup. And the Cavaliers are really good. I know everybody's afraid of the Celtics, and rightfully so, or at least has an appropriate amount of respect for the Celtics. I think a lot of people are sleeping on the Cavaliers just because we haven't seen them go far in the playoffs. People were saying the same thing about the Bucks before they won the championship in 2021. Like, yeah, well, they lost to the Miami Heat in the bubble. They lost to the Raptors when they were up two games to none in the Eastern Conference Finals. Like, can this team really do it in the playoffs? It's a group that's been together through the playoffs for a while, and it's just come up short. So I don't think it's a show me in the playoffs. Like, I'll believe it when I see it with Cleveland. I think they're good. I do think there's a part to that, but I don't think it's just this, well, I'd rather play the Cavs than the Celtics. So, and that's the thing. You finish fourth, you got to get out of the first round, as we've experienced the last 2 years. But you finish fourth, you're getting Cleveland in the second round.
Yeah, I mean, I said, I think, last show that we had, I wanted Indiana just because of many reasons outside of them knocking us out of the first round last year. But, I mean, to me, nothing's going to change. And I could probably, you could probably talk me into the New York matchup. I'd prefer probably to say, that's one I might want to avoid in the first round. I could certainly be talked into it. Probably wouldn't take you more than five minutes.
And to be clear, I'm not saying I want to finish sixth.
No, I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying.
Like, yeah. I think it could be much worse. I mean, the big thing is just don't finish in the play-in tournament and...
Yeah, and be healthy.
Same thing we said about you're kind of walled off from getting into the 3-2 range because of certainly the 2 range. I mean, you're now 9 games back of the Celtics there. 10 when you factor in the fact that you don't have the tiebreaker. But I think you're walled off from the 3 seed. Well, the same case can be made for the play-in tournament because the Bucks do hold the tiebreaker over the Orlando Magic. They can get it over the Atlanta Hawks. They do have it over the Miami Heat. And all of those teams are 5 or 6 games back of them in the loss column. So I feel pretty confident in saying the Bucks are not going to be a play-in tournament team. So to me, if you're 4 or 5, your other point of health, that's the most important part. If you're on the 4-5 line, yeah, you'd love to have home court. But if you drop down to 6th, fine. I'll take my chances with the New York Knicks as long as this group is healthy.
Yeah, and I'll say this too. If you're a fan of the Milwaukee Bucks, which I'm assuming if you're listening, you are. You're gonna
or
you're
have
just
to be a fan of me.
Oh, there might be that. You're going to have to beat good teams to get to your ultimate goal. Like, you can't run and hide.
Yeah, there's no easy path.
There's no easy path, and it's just and you got to do it. And I think too, I think Justin, because we just haven't seen it with Giannis and Dame. Like, they have a first round matchup that's a little bit tougher than maybe that, you know, folks want. I'm curious of what that confidence booster is for those two guys playing together. Like, we already know that they're really confident players. Giannis has proven that. Dame has proven that. They haven't proven it together yet as far as playoff success. They go into the first round and they go into New York and they beat a team that they're going to be the betting underdogs. I mean, I'm curious what that would do to their confidence going forward in the playoffs. And that would be a team, and I'm not just saying this because I'm a Bucks fan, that I would not want to be facing in round two if I'm, you know, whoever it's going to be. Like, that's a dangerous team, especially if they're healthy, which if they get out of the first round, I anticipate they will be.
Thursday night, Bucks and the Denver Nuggets, pretty even split the rest of the way. 13 home games remaining, 12 road games remaining. Bucks and the Nuggets Thursday night. Make note of the tip time. It's a 7 o'clock tip. I think this was originally a 6:30 tip. It is a 7 o'clock tip and has been upgraded to a national game, getting the TNT treatment for the Bucks and the Denver Nuggets. So 7 o'clock on Thursday evening, 6:30 is when our pregame coverage begins. And as always, be sure to stick around after the game for Bucks Talk. We will talk with you then.